All right. Finish up our study of James today. It's been some good, interesting lessons. But today is a good one, I think. It fits us all. Would anybody say that anticipation adds spice to life?
Anxiety.
Because the writer points out, it anticipation can also include thoughts of fear and worry. And sometimes it's the eager expectation of something that will arrive in the future. So on those thoughts, do you ever eagerly anticipate the second coming of Christ? Do you?
It seems like more so as time's getting harder and things are getting worse. I think we need to look more towards that.
Definitely. But starting out, James is really, it's part of the lesson, but not in the main scriptures. He's talking about, quote, the wealthy people in those days. He's telling them, you know, you weep and wail because of the misery that is coming among you. He says your wealth is rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. He goes on, he says, you have hoarded wealth in the last days. And then he warns them, he says, you fail to pay the wages of the workmen who mowed your fields and are crying out against you. You've lived in earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You fatten yourselves on the day of slaughter. And you've condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. Same thing happens today. There are people who are very, very, very wealthy that could help others if they so chose to. But they won't relinquish it for fear that maybe I won't have anything. But that's not the way the Lord wants us to work. We should want to help people. Because the main focus of the scripture, starting in verse 7, he tells them, be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. He says, see how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, and how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Did anybody ever have farmers in their lives, in their families? If you think about that, if that was your living, would you, okay, I know they have rituals and routines and they probably plan at a certain time, but once the planning is done, do you ever known one that would just go back home and forget the field? They would go off and do something else and then wait for a set time in the future to go and the crops are going to be ready. Doesn't work that way.
The weeds would grow faster.
You never find the produce.
That's right, because of the weeds.
Bugs would take over.
Right.
That's right.
I can see my daddy in the field plowing the furrows between us. You know, to keep the weeds down.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch the weather.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Dependent, you know, when they didn't have all this irrigation like they have now, but they were really dependent on the rain.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they've lost heart sometimes.
Imagine those, the hurricane.
Just wiped all that out.
Because down that way, that's such a strong part of that southern part of Georgia, that very top of Florida there, all that Georgia pecans, and here we are.
And all their work before that, waiting on the harvest, and then it just
But he's talking, it's like a foot race too. if you were a long distance runner, you were going to go run a marathon. And I think some of them are 26 miles long. When they fired the gun or whatever to signal the start of the race, would you just start running as fast as you could and as hard as you could? Mm-mm. You start out in a slow, steady pace. You have to pattern yourself. Do we as Christians sometimes anticipate the second coming of Christ too anxiously? Or do we pattern ourselves like a runner? Are we patient and waiting on that? And do we, and in doing that, do we not lose hope of that ever happening in our time?
A lot of times when you're a new Christian, when you're first converted, man, you're gung-ho, mm-hmm. you go out and save the world, and then it kind of gradually goes down, and you have to be real careful not to lose sight.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes the circumstances that we're in our lives right now, we know that if the Lord was to come, we wouldn't have to deal with all those things, whether it be a sickness or your job loss or what. If he had come today, then I wouldn't have to worry about that because it would be over. Mm-hmm. I would be there, and all the stuff that is going on in our lives right now, the good and the bad, it wouldn't matter because, I mean, I believe it's kind of like you leave it all behind. We're gone. So who cares about the job anymore? I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Because he warns them, but in verse 8 he comes back and he tells them, you must also be patient. Do we as faithful followers of Christ sometimes lose our patience or not being patient enough that the church is not going like it should? You know, do we anticipate great things, but then they don't happen? Talks to him about strengthening your heart. This is a tough one because how many of you could say that no matter what comes my way, I'm strong enough to face it? But when something comes in your life, you discover there is that weakness in me. So how do you strengthen yourself to overcome that or deal with the situation that's presented itself?
I think like what we're doing now, studying the Word,
mm-hmm.
and in a prayer line,
encouragement you get from that, being around other Christians and around Christians who have experienced it, some of the things in your life, whether it be death, grief, you know, that type of thing, you can minister to people that through that. Through your losses or whatever you dealt with, you can help somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we saw that in video, and she set the bar so high. I always told her, I said, I'll never be able to reach that bar because through her sickness, I mean, she had more joy than anybody I could imagine.
Mm-hmm. And
And
she lived every day that way.
Oh, yes, she did. She went to the cancer center. Man, she was, you know, witnessing to everybody out there, and it was an everyday thing.
Well, and her statement, too, about, you know, at first when she first had it, you didn't need to go to the cancer center to be with those people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the counseling sessions, I guess. But then once she started and she went, then she could find joy because there were other people that were doing the same thing she was, and they could swap their stories and their encouragement, and it just made a great difference in her life. But look what she did for other people.
Absolutely.
Because when he tells them to strengthen their hearts because the Lord is near, is that a false hope in some people's eyes maybe? You know, because here you're telling me this and it's, you know, it's been over 2,000 years and he hadn't come back yet. So what is near? You know, when so can you get anxious, and by getting anxious and waiting for that to happen, can your faith kind of wane down some sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
The big prize.
It gets tired of waiting.
Well, years ago, some people just thought it was a certain date. They went, so everybody was sitting there waiting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll sit right here and wait until tomorrow, and it'll be here.
And then they,
you know, there was some group, and my mm-hmm. sister-in-law's family was in it, up in North Alabama. They sold everything they had, and they went up to, what's the mountain?
Cheehower.
Anyway, whatever it was, they went up there
and just waited.
Lived in tents, just waited and waited and waited and lost their jobs and everything. My sister-in-law's family, they were Church of God Prophecy or something like that, and they all just knew Christ was coming that day, and they all had to be up
on
the
mountain. Somebody put a book out of it. That Christ was coming on a certain time years ago.
Yeah, and everybody went. That's right. That's what I always fall back on. Even the angels were
right.
Absolutely. So I thought, well, how could a human being?
But the words in verse 9, it says, brothers and sisters, do not complain about one another so that you will not be judged. And he says, look, the judge stands at the door. Who has the main vision into our heart? And who can judge your sin greater than anybody else? And that's the Lord. But do we sometimes forget that? And we'll talk about somebody. Or we'll complain about them.
It happens. Every day, somebody got something to say about somebody.
Mm-hmm. How bad they are.
That's right.
How wrong they are.
All bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it works.
But how many times, and this is a good thought, how many times do you feel accountable for the way that person is acting?
Like it's my fault.
I told you so. I told you if you didn't quit doing that, this was going to happen to you. And then when something bad does happen to them, does it make you feel bad?
No, because I told them not to do it. Yeah, they didn't listen.
Because we should remember is we don't answer for our own hurtful thoughts or deeds. The writer says we do not stand accountable for the harm done by others because we can't control them. We might judge them, which we shouldn't. We might talk to them about their ways. But is that the wrong thing to do? But he does says we do not stand accountable for the harm done by others, which would mean I'm not accountable for something that somebody else did to me. They are.
That's a good refresher because it's true. You know, we have children, and when our kids don't do right,
we blame ourselves.
What did I do to go wrong?
Yeah.
What happened? And so.
I mean, I've had that with a coworker. She has a son that has some issues, but he had something happen the past week or two, and she's just all been out of shape. And I told her, I said, first off, I've never been there. Secondly, you didn't cause that to happen. He did. So don't hold yourself responsible for his actions. I know that's hard to say. But, you know, you want to work with your children to, if they have an issue, to work through it. But it's their responsibility to take it on and work through it themselves. You shouldn't be held accountable for that.
Yes, my friend, that her son was found on Cherry Street dead as a drug addict. Now she feels so guilty because she moved. It was so bad. She had two kids and both of them were close. She just moved and left them in the house, left everything and went to Greenville and got a senior adult apartment. Now it's just eating her alive because she felt like she deserted him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she couldn't control it. She, that's the reason she had to leave. She had no control over it. And she's a real fine Christian lady, but you know, and I'm sure she'll have to work through that grief.
Mm-hmm.
It's really bad on her now.
Especially like for mothers, you always want to be the
fixer.
You
want to fix it.
You want to fix it. If I just do this, then you fix that. And then you say, oh,
when you want to be fixers. You want this one to be happy with this one, and this one to be happy with this one. And,
I think that's just a
mother. You know, because, you know, our family's large, so everybody is, it's just different. You know, we're all different. That's what all of us, and everybody is. It's so different. And you wonder, though, does Jesus ever feel like he's felt, does he have those feelings that we have?
That he's different than us?
No, that he put us in this situation. I'm in this situation with Christian people, but yet still, my heart's really not in it. I'm just in here. Do you think he ever feels like, what did I do that she's not accepting these people or not really reading the scriptures or, you know, do you think he ever feels that way, or is it just a human thing? Because he's not like us.
Right. He's not like us. He doesn't have those human, the feelings that we have, you know.
I think he had the human feelings when he walked the earth.
Right.
But it's different that it's the Holy Spirit that should be in us, and he places things in our lives to make us be like him. Do you think he ever wonders, what did I do that she's not accepting it and not trying to be like me? You see what I'm saying? Do you see where I'm coming, what I'm asking? Do you think he feels that way? Because I think he hurts when people don't accept it.
Well, he hurts, but like the next verses, starting at 13. It says, if any one of you is in trouble, he should pray. If anyone is happy, let him sing songs of praise. If any one of you is sick, he should call the elders of the church to pray over him and anoint him with oil in the name of the Lord. So I guess the little answer to your question is, Jesus' heart may hurt, but do you think he's praying for everybody that is suffering, that they will change? The ones that are suffering, are they willing to change their hearts and offer prayer to Jesus to comfort and help them? Because, you know, what Brother Willis is going through with the study of prayer, that fits this, because in our times of trials and troubles, who is the first person we really should want to talk to? The Lord. And when we fail to talk to him, what does that do? To me, it kind of closes the door for anybody else for you to open up to and say, I need you. You know, that's, you know, how hard is it in church life when you have something like that going on in your life that you openly, in front of everybody, say, I need help? You know, it's, what would the church be like if more people opened up and did that? And it gave everyone else inside the church an opportunity. You don't have to go one-on-one with that person, but you could take that home with you and put it in your prayer journal and pray for them. Just think about all the prayers that would be lifted up.
I think that's a pride thing. I mean, it would be hard for us. I'll use us as an example to stand up there and say, our marriage is in trouble. Please help us. Do you know how hard that would be? To admit that we have problems in our marriage, but yet still you're standing up there teaching a Sunday school class, and I'm all, you know, happy. So it's a prideful thing. So it's hard for people to admit that there is an area in our life that we have a weakness, that we have a need. You know, you see what I'm saying? It's
a lot of failure. We don't want to share that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I don't want to tell anybody, because I want y'all to keep thinking everything in our family and life is perfect. So there. When people, there's a lot of reasons I think people put unspoken
request.
Because the God issue, I don't want to tell you that, but I would appreciate your prayers.
Mm-hmm. When he talks about, is anybody cheerful? If you're happy in the Lord, that's going to exude. That's going to show. But how many times, and going back to that, like you're a strong Christian, and like you mentioned, Betty Irwin, others who have had pain and suffering, how many times do we kind of just close in? That cheerfulness goes away. But if you kind of think about it, is we get selfish. I'm the only one that's dealing with this. But then, like, you might meet somebody that's experiencing the same thing, and their life is a little different than yours. You know, like the writer points out, a Christian can still be cheerful in times of pain. But then, if you're sick, you know, it's like Jonah. Many times in the life of the church over the years have we somebody gotten sick, but nobody knew about it. I don't want to be a burden to anybody. I don't want anybody to mess with me, or, you know, I'm home, I want to be by myself. But sometimes just a little word of encouragement might help you, or just somebody showing up at your door, coming in for just a moment and just checking on you to see how you're doing and leaving. That kind of helps your feelings. That builds you up. But you know, the church has a responsibility for the sick, in that it talks about the elders, the leaders of the church. They are the ones that are anointed to take care of the sick and pray over the sick. I mean, Lord forbid if any church didn't do that to any member of their flock that was experiencing sickness. What would that say to that person? You know, it's like you have something that we don't want to get and bring into our church. So you just stay at home.
But we're praying for you. You just don't come to church.
Right.
That's right. No, get close to me.
Chris Little said she felt so important. Yes, I said she never felt so important. Brother Witness came to see her. Bill Smith came to see her. And she said, and Jerry Berger came to see her. And he didn't visit. She felt very important.
That's what here are praying for.
But the big question comes up, well, what if everything like this happens and you've prayed for this person and they die? Was it all in vain?
No.
Yeah, I remember when Marvin was so sick and with that cancer. And I just prayed and prayed. And of course, the family was praying that the Lord would heal him. He did it. But he healed him perfectly to take him away.
Because that's what the writer points out. That question would remain a mystery only known to God. Believers know, however, that ultimately God raises up the dead believer to the healing of eternal life. But it talks about sin. You know, you can inflict sin upon yourself, whether it be bad habits, a family member that's involved in alcohol and drugs that creates problems for themselves. This writer even brings out, you know, you might want to eat too much, and it causes gluttony. That can bring us, because that can. I'm guilty. That's right. That's right. But if you think about it, does sin cause all illnesses? No.
And people think that, though.
Mm-hmm.
What did they do to cause?
Yeah, now why, if they were living right, they probably wouldn't have got mm-hmm. half this problem.
Yeah, it's like they used to believe that if you were ill, something you did or your parents did.
It was,
and
yeah.
The Bible tells you absolutely that is not true.
Yeah. Right.
Because you think about this, you maybe in your life there's been someone like that with maybe a severe alcohol problem, and you've worked with them, you've talked with them, and you tell them, you know, if you'll get rid of this, the Lord is going to forgive you for all of this. But the Lord may forgive that person, but when he comes back to you and says, you know, I've quit doing this and I've committed my life to the Lord, but I'm still sick. Why? I thought you said the Lord was going to heal me. He doesn't guarantee the restoration of health back to that person. He wants to change their heart. Because it says forgiveness does not restore a right relationship with God that leads to spiritual healing. But do we, verse 16, therefore confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is very powerful in its effect. How difficult is that? To go to someone and say, I'm going to confess my sins to you, and then I want, you know, you to pray for me. Mm-hmm. But think about the life of a pastor. How many situations do they encounter that people come to them and unload the darkness secrets of their lives on? And who, and that pastor, who can they talk to? The Lord. But, you know, I've often wondered how a pastor sometimes could keep it all together in that aspect, knowing some of the things that they hear. And then when they offer advice or offer help and that person turns them down or shuns them away, you know, how does that change their relationship with that person? Because, I shouldn't say it, but one time in the life of our church, there was a pastor who said in situations like that, sometimes he would, when that person would leave, he would have to go out and sometimes throw up. It would just unnerve that person so bad to hear those stories and what was going on. But when we think about when we admit our wrongdoings or any wickedness in our lives, shouldn't that begin the process of healing in yourself? Because, I mean, I look at it, a person comes and does that and admits this is going on, that's a big step. I mean, it's like an alcoholic going to AAA, it's standing up and saying, I am an alcoholic. That's a big step. But getting back into the prayer and praying for people, we need people in our lives to intercede for us, because there are situations where you just can't do it all by yourself. And it's like Brother Willis has said before, it fits this statement. It says, prayer can be powerful in its effect because the God who hears our prayers is powerful. And it's like he's taught us, what do you say when you pray? What should I pray about? I mean, it's like the first statement he ever made. It's really just an open conversation with God. Get on your knees and talk to him. You know, spill everything out before him. Because it doesn't matter how small it is or how large it is. God is going to listen. But he closes a little bit. This verse 17, he was talking about Elijah. And I guess Elijah was upset with a group of people, and he prayed that it would not rain. And it didn't for 3.5 years. I guess he was seeing that, like they were talking about in the first part of the lesson, maybe these people became proud and arrogant, and he was trying to teach them a lesson. But then it says again in verse 18, again he prayed and the heavens gave rain and the earth produced its crops. But the last two verses says, my brothers and sisters, if one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring him back, remember this, whoever turns a sinner from the error of the way of his way will save him from death and cover a multitude of sins. Does it have to be something real bad for somebody to walk away from the love of Christ?
Not necessarily.
Mm-mm. It could be something small. It could just be, I'm tired of going to church. I'm just going to stay at home. I'm going to read my Bible. I'm going to watch the guys on TV. But I'm just not going to go back to church. Is that a big sin or a little sin?
No,
sin is sin. Mm-hmm.
But people like Mr. Walters of all those folks are going to judge you about it.
Yeah, they're going to talk about you.
Mm-hmm. You know, what did we do? What did we say? What is their issue? You know, why? Why are you not coming back? So, you know, folks are going to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you do. Like you said, it's going to affect other people's your action. Is it something I did that made you decide that you didn't want to come back to church? You know, and that's just the way we are. Whereas it's your decision, and it's between you and the Lord, but it puts us all mm-hmm. in a bad position mm-hmm. because we want to know why.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand people not wanting to go to church. There are people who don't ever go.
And it doesn't
seem to affect them. Well, we were out of church for a long time, and it affected us very bad. I mean, I think if you're a Christian and you're out for something, it's got to eat on you. It did us.
I'm just raised to go to church, and I'm just always going.
You know, because I know I made the comment before when Paige went away to college, you know, she didn't go to church. And I told her, I said, Paige, if you're going to just once a week, usually there's something in a sermon or something in the church that will carry you
right.
all week. If it's just one sentence, uh-huh. that one sentence will help you get to where, you know, and I mean, we were fortunate she did get back in church, but we all know that kids go off to college sometimes.
That's the worst area.
And that's a tough time living in a dorm and nobody else gets up Sunday morning to leave except you're the only one leaving with a Bible, you know.
Yeah.
That is a tough time. That's a hard, you know, situation.
That's like Dustin and him in the Navy out there.
Yeah.
A lot of Sundays he works. She's kind of shy. She loves it. She's scared. So Brother Willis has got a pastor friend that's going to visit them because he's at First Baptist on Coronado Island.
Good.
That's where they're at. So he's going to visit them.
That's good.
Well, we see that Paige is living with us. You know, she's still housing. And that's what Oliver says. We see, I mean, Paige is very, she does the reading and she journals and her prayer life mm-hmm. and all that stuff. But it's like he said, we need to help her find a place over there, because then she told me, she said, then I'll be able to find me a church.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the young people in it that she needs, young adults. And we do need, if y'all will pray for Morgan and Ronnie, there's been some significant change in Ronnie's eyes, and so their lifestyle's going to have to change a little bit. He's going to probably have to maybe go on disability.
Ooh.
And so it's going to be a challenge for them, but, you know, she seems to be more upbeat than I think I would be.
Yeah.
Don't she, Oliver?
Yes, ma'am. But 1 Peter 4:8 says, above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. Miss Annette.
And you mentioned a couple of times about the prayer thing at Brother Willis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying
that.
Oh, you know, it's all things that we know, but it's such a refresher, and it brings it back home in a different, you know, in a different
perspective.
Mind, and I'm enjoying that.
Well, this
so
in the
much.
Book.
I love the book. I go through the book. And, you know,
the pictures in here. I never thought about the art of the cut. It being that
way. Oh, I know it. I know
that's
it.
How
I love that.
I never.
And you missed the Wednesday night he did the art of the covenant.
Oh, no. Yeah, I know.
And it was just amazing.
Yeah.
That was that first Wednesday night that I was sick. So.
And it was, yeah, he's done it. It's very,
he's
and it's
very
easy to understand.
Uh-huh.
It's not.
Over
not,
our head.
Exactly.
He's
done
yeah.
A very good job.
I sure am enjoying it. But anyway, okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
That's good.
Words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.
I saw your pictures.